My name is Trina Thiele and I'm recording this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust. The date today is the 6th of October 2009 and it's 7:20 p.m. This is for Anthony Gormley's One Another project. Could you please state your name, age and where you're from?
Yes, my name's Mary Louise Currell. I'm 33 years old and I was born in Yorkshire, grew up in Lancashire and now I live in Merseyside in Liverpool, the best city in the world.
How are you today?
I'm very nervous actually. I'm really good. I've travelled down from Liverpool today, care of Mr. Branson on Virgin Trains, got me here nicely and I've been to the Tibet Relief Fund offices to get my yak costume and I've made my way here to Trafalgar Square, so it's quite exciting. I feel good but very nervous.
How did you first find out about the project?
I heard something on television about Anthony Gormley, and of course in Liverpool, just up the road in Crosby, we've got the Anthony Gormley statues, so I was familiar with Anthony Gormley beforehand, so it did catch my eye when I heard Anthony Gormley's name, and I thought, oh, that sounds quite interesting, so I just applied off a whim, didn't even imagine that I would ever get chosen. I thought there would be, you know, it'd be real demand. 2,400 slots sounds a lot, you know, the demand, as you know, 30,000 people have applied and I've just been so lucky to get on it. But it was mainly the telly, and then I know a few people who've actually also been chosen, which is a very small world, but so mainly the media.
How did you feel when you found out you got chosen?
Shocked, actually. I was really, really shocked because I never imagined that I'd be able to get involved in something like this. So I was really surprised, and because I got chosen quite late on in the day, and because it's been going since the 6th of July, which is His Holiness the Dalai Lama's birthday, they chose every month, and every month, for the first few months, I was checking, I thought, oh no, quite disappointed that I hadn't been chosen, but I didn't expect to get chosen. So when it come to the last draw, I'd forgotten about it, to be honest. I was like, you know, oh, well, I'm not going to get on there, you know. I was still having a little look on the website, having a look at all these crazy people on the plinth, some people just standing there, other people, you know, dancing, etc. But I never imagined that I'd get picked in the last draw. So I was chuffed a bit. It's boss.
And why did you decide you wanted to take part?
Really, I don't know. You're asking me this directly before I get onto the plinth and I'm really thinking, why on earth did I do this? But I really love art, and Liverpool is a city of art. I mean, we have it coming out of our ears. We've got fantastic galleries. We've got the Walker Art Gallery. We've got the Tate. We've got Fact, which is a really innovative place for movies and art and IT, etc. We've just an absolutely amazing city. We've got the Liverpool Biennial, happens as its name would suggest, every 2 years, and they're just really cool people, really enthusiastic about art, and it kind of rubs off on you. I've not really been involved in anything like this before, so it's something new to me, but I think I'll enjoy it.
How long have you been in Liverpool?
I've been in Liverpool around about 9 years now, so I've been to quite a few biennials, but I work as a PA there for a regeneration company, which is very exciting. And what else can I say about what I do in Liverpool? Eat, drink, socialise, I think is the main thing. But I lived there for about 9 years, and I've bought my house there, and I think it's an amazing place to live. Absolutely love it. And before then, like I say, I was born in Yorkshire, so I was born in Keighley, and then I grew up in Lancashire, so I'm a little bit of a pink rose, and now I've gone over the border to Merseyside. So
why did you decide to go to Liverpool in the first place?
At the time, I was seeing a guy who got a graduate placement there, because it's absolutely a fantastic place for jobs, especially young people, some absolutely fantastic career moves for people to come to Liverpool, some really good businesses, so that was it. It was a graduate placement scheme at one of the big blue chip companies, and I mean, obviously he went long ago, but I stayed with Liverpool because it's just fantastic. It's an amazing place, and you know, more people should come and live there.
Are you still with him now?
No. He was long gone. about 8 years ago.
And can you describe a little bit more about your work?
I work as a PA to a corporate services director. I work for a company who are an economic development company. So we really want to make Liverpool a better place. So just driving businesses, physical improvements. You can look out your window on any day, and you know, you can feel good about something that you've contributed to, whether it's the new cruise liner terminal, or if it's the King's Waterfront Arena, or if it's the new fantastic pierhead and the canal, or you know, you name it. There's a million and one things that we've been involved in, you know, everything from public realm to, you know, chairs and pavements to, you know, big developments like the Museum of Liverpool. So it's fantastic, yeah. I really enjoy it.
And do you feel you're succeeding? It's going in the right direction with the company?
Oh, absolutely. We're actually a new company. We merged about 18 months ago now. So it's a really exciting time for Liverpool, and there's still a lot of development work going on. Even though the Capital of Culture was in 2008, it certainly hasn't stalled at all. It's just growing, and the momentum is there, and hopefully it'll keep on growing. It's a sleeping giant is Liverpool, and I think it's waking up.
And going back to the plinth.
Yeah.
What are you going to be doing on the plinth for your hour?
Well, at first, I hadn't got any ideas because I didn't think that I was going to be chosen. So I didn't have anything set in my mind to start with. And I was watching people on the plinth thinking, oh my goodness, there's people reading poetry, there's people dancing, there's people just stood there, people sat there, people doing all sorts of exciting things, playing guitars, and you know, some really creative people. And I thought, oh, I wonder what I can do. And I don't really have any, you know, natural born talents, if you like. So I thought the best thing for me to do would be to use the hour to support a charity, to highlight something, raise awareness. So I decided on the Tibet Relief Fund, because I was brought up Tibetan Buddhist, so I've been Tibetan Buddhist since as long as I can remember, and it just seemed like an ideal choice for me because I'm a member of Tibet Relief Fund and Tibet Society, and they do some absolutely amazing work, not just in Tibet but in Dharamsala in India, in Bhutan, in Nepal, some fantastic work.
You said you were brought up a Tibetan Buddhist?
Yep, that's right, yes. My parents brought me up Tibetan Buddhist, though they're not Tibetan. So I've always been brought up with Tibetan friends. I've, you know, always been around meditation and Buddhist prayers. And I like to think that's why I try to be a good person. Because it really does make you think of other people and how important other people are, and you really just try and treat people like you want to be treated yourself. So
were you brought up like that from the moment you were born, or halfway?
My parents were interested in Buddhism not that long after I was born, really. But the first time I went to a Buddhist centre, I was probably nearing 3 year old. And that was a really wonderful experience, and I do remember it to this day, that because just wonderful people, really gentle people. But as you can imagine, at 3 year old, Tibetan monks and Tibetan nuns, so you know, at the time I was living in a very, you know, conservative area, you know, no black people, or you know, people of different cultures, mainly Christian, Catholic. So going to a Buddhist centre where it's just the variety of people, you know, from all over the world, we're talking America, Canada, and this is, you know, this is 30 years ago. So at the time for me, you know, and especially as a little child, it was just fantastic. But they're just wonderful people. The Tibetans are just such nice, kind, gentle people, and they love children. And of course, I've got an older sister, she's a couple of years older than me, and you know, they just played with us, and it was just happy, really happy times. And I have continued with that through my life, really. Tibetan Buddhism has always been there for me. I mean, I've been very lucky, nothing terrible has happened in my life. But at times, you know, if you're moving area or moving house and things are particularly stressful, it's always been there as a calming influence, really, in my life. Meditation, although I'm not very good at it, because I'm you know, quite... not an extrovert person, but I'm quite bubbly and quite excitable and noisy, so I think it does help, though I'm not very good at meditation, but it does tend to calm me and really allow me just to settle myself down and find a little bit of peace, I think.
And you said the area you lived in was quite conservative.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you were brought up Tibetan Buddhist.
Yep.
How did the two sort of, how did it work, I should say? How did they complement each other? Or did they complement each other? Did they not complement each other?
Oh, I think so. I think being a Tibetan Buddhist, people are obviously quite interested. What does that mean? What do you do? You know, but it doesn't really make you an alien creature. All Tibetan Buddhism is, it could even be you could say it was a philosophy rather than a religion, because it's all about training the mind and trying to be a better person. And you know, you look at His Holiness the Dalai Lama, who's the head of the Gelugpa sect, which is what my parents followed, and he's just such an inspiration for non-Buddhists, never mind Buddhists themselves. You know, he's such a gentle, compassionate, kind man, and an example to us all. Growing up, it was always very, very helpful to be Buddhist. It was always very helpful to have that place that you can go when, you know, to relax and to feel like a good person.
And going back to your hour on the plinth,
yep.
Do you have any props?
I do, yes. The Tibet Relief Fund have just been absolutely marvellous. Absolutely marvellous. And I know that they're really busy themselves. And when I went into their office earlier today, you know, the phones were going. You know, it's just such a vibrant place to work. But they took the time to look after me whilst I was there, and you know, they shared the materials with me, which was great, and they let me have the pick of the choice of what I wanted. So I've got one thing that I'm going to be wearing, actually. It's a Tibetan yak outfit, which I'm quite excited about wearing, because it covers me from literally head to toe, and I'm quite scared of being on the plinth, so I think that will give me a little bit of confidence, being a Tibetan yak. But also, it's actually got a yak head as well, and I think that'll attract a little bit of attention from the crowd as well, so that'd be quite nice. I'm also flying the Tibetan flag, which I think is really important. I think the more people know about Tibetans and what a peaceful, gentle, exciting culture it is, I think the more we will be inclined to preserve that and protect that. So I've got the Tibetan flag, which I'm very proud to be flying, and I've also got a few leaflets which I might be making paper planes out, which I actually just learnt to make a paper plane, so watch them. But yeah, so I've got some prayer flags, which I'll be tying from the flag to the handbar in the middle, so that if we have a little bit of a breeze, I really hope we have a little bit of breeze but no rain, and then the flag and the prayer flags will be flying high and sending the prayers into Trafalgar Square, so I'll be really, really happy about that. I've also got a little old stereo system, actually, which I didn't think I'd be able to find one, because it's got a cassette. Now, when I was a kid, all my music used to be tapes and cassettes, whereas nowadays, well, I don't even know what it is nowadays, to be honest. It was CDs and now it's MP3 players, and you know, you just download your tunes from the internet and what have you. So I was really lucky to find one of my friends, Katie from Tibet Relief Fund. She's lent me a little stereo with a cassette in, so I can play some Tibetan prayers. So hopefully people will listen to the prayers and enjoy them. So that's pretty much what I'll be doing. I've got little Tibetan flags and that kind of thing, so I'm quite excited and quite terrified.
Have you been to Tibet?
I haven't been to Tibet, no. I know for quite some time it was actually closed off to the West, but there have been times where it's also been opened, and you know, I know friends who've been to Lhasa, so I haven't been there. I would love to go to Tibet, but I would actually love to go to Tibet 50 years ago, because I think it's changed quite a lot over the last 50, 60 years. I would like, if I had a time machine, I'd like to go back and go to Lhasa then. But I'd also like to go to India to see where the His Holiness the Dalai Lama lives in exile, Dharamsala, and that'd be very exciting.
And can you tell me a little bit more about where you grew up? Was it in a community or just
natural? No, I wasn't. It was basically just as you'd have a Catholic family who, you know, practiced Catholicism. It was just a Buddhist household. We had, I don't know whether you call them rituals or, you know, we always had the altar in the corner of the room, you know, with the Buddha in the middle and the text. And we'd have tanka paintings, absolutely amazing tanka paintings of Buddhas, you know, green, blue, lots of different types of Buddhas, fearsome Buddhas. And of course, Shakyamuni was the Buddha that everybody thinks of when everybody says Buddha. I remember we had a huge tanka painting of Maitreya, who is the Buddha yet to come. Maitreya is the next Buddha. So we had, you know, we had things like that around the house. If you walked into my parents' house when I was, you know, 10, 11, you would know that it was a Buddhist household, you know. But there was nothing different, you know. We were still kids growing up in the West. Went to school like everybody else, had fish and chips like everybody else. So there's no difference there. It's, yeah, just like a Catholic, Buddhist, Muslim, Hindu. Yeah.
And do you have any hopes or fears or expectations about going on play?
I hope. I hope I don't fall off. I'm terrified of heights. I'm not a big fan of heights at all. But I think I'll be fine. I'm sure I will. So I just hope I enjoy it. I hope everybody else around has a little laugh at me being in a yak costume. I hope all my friends and family watching me like being live streamed over the internet, one another, .co.uk. I hope they enjoy having a little laugh at me, which I'm sure they will. But I also hope that people around Trafalgar Square, you know, maybe have a little think about Tibet. So maybe people haven't really, they don't know about Tibet, and they don't, you know, never really been involved with Tibet, or probably don't know Tibetans, or haven't come across Buddhism. Maybe they'll have a little look at the website, the Tibet Relief Fund website, and have a little look and see what it's all about. So that's what I hope. I suppose that's what the fear as well. Fear of falling off. I know that there hasn't been anybody fall into the netting yet, and I think that I'm going to be the first. I really hope I'm not, though. But I think I'll enjoy it. I am terrified, and I know going up in that cherry picker, my hands will be shaking, my knees will be knocking. You know, people will see this yak all terrified. But I hope once I get on there, and I know all my friends and my family are wishing me the best, sending me good vibes. So I really hope that I enjoy it. I think I will, but I am terrified.
Why are you so terrified?
I don't like heights. I'm not particularly good at being in the spotlight. I'm never the clown in the group. I'm not a leader. I'm a follower. I'm a team player. And you know, you certainly the focus of attention, aren't you? Stood on the plinth. So I don't know. We'll see. I think I'll enjoy it. I hope so. And I hope I don't fall off.
Why do you not like being in the spotlight?
I really don't know, because I can be quite extrovert. I'm a Leo, so Leos are meant to be full of life and extrovert and boisterous and love attention. And if I know what I'm doing, I don't mind. I've done presentations, and if I have to, I can stand up at the middle of the room and talk to people about things that I'm confident about and I know about through and through. But I don't like it. I just don't like being in the spotlight. I like to watch. I'm a people watcher. I like sitting in a cafe and watching people go by. But on this occasion, I'm going to be right in the spotlight. It'll be fun.
And what would you personally hope to gain from this experience?
I've not really thought of what I'll get out of it, to be honest. Because I am a little bit nervous about being in the spotlight, I think maybe it'll give me the confidence to know if I can stand on the plinth for an hour, what else can I do, you know? it is quite a brave thing for me to be doing. So I think it will improve my confidence, and I think it'll be a laugh. I just want to have fun, which is why I've chosen a big furry brown yak outfit with a huge paper mache head with huge horns. So no, it'd be great. I can't wait.
And who would you say you're doing it for?
I would say I'm doing it for the Tibet Relief Fund. I would say I was doing it for the Tibetan people and to highlight the cause. But I'm also doing it for myself because it's something that's important to me. So I would say I'm also doing it for myself because, the Tibetan cause is very important, and it's something that people really should know what's happening, and, should take an interest in preserving a culture that could, hopefully never, but could be forgotten, which would be very sad.
And do you feel it's going in the right direction with the charity helping Tibet?
I think they do absolutely wonderful work, but they're really, they're a small organisation, and they've got a huge task. They work wonders. But I think until politically the situation is resolved, they will continue to work wonders, and improve lives for children, for elderly people, for monks and nuns who followed His Holiness the Dalai Lama into Dharamsala. There's about 130,000, I think, Tibetans in Nepal, Bhutan, India. So they do, they do absolutely marvellous work, but, the people still keep coming over the borders, and the same problems still continue. So I think, although it's an absolutely amazing charity, they do fantastic work, they're still going to have to work harder in the future, and they just need so much help to do that. And part of the part of the raising the awareness, I think will help. It will help their cause. So we shall see.
Unfortunately, we have to stop here, but thank you very much.
Thank